ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day, welcome to the program. My name's Fiona Broom. Lovely to have your company this Thursday lunchtime. Well, an exotic potato virus has been discovered in Australia for the very first time.
I think it's very concerning in the fact that this is the first time this virus has been detected in Australia, and it probably represents a significant failure in our biosecurity protocols.
You'll hear more on how biosecurity authorities are responding to that virus detection ahead on the show. And how do you get a bunch of high school students interested in agricultural science?
Definitely picking the maggots from like fake bodies and stuff. It was pretty fun. You had to get like the maggots out with these tweezers and all covered in highlighter dye, so you got to see on the black light how much you got contaminated and everything.
It seems the answer to that question is just to give them a bunch of maggots or a bucket of goo to stick their arms in. On today's program, I'll take you to the Science Week activities that have been happening at the Territory's research farms. Let's get into it. But let's begin today with food access and nutrition. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on this issue. 0487 991057 is the text number. The federal government yesterday released a national food security strategy discussion paper, and they've begun the search for members of a national food council. So what could a national food security strategy look like? Why do we need one? Australian Agriculture Minister Julie Collins took the Country Hour's Megan Hughes through the details.
What we want to do is have a look across the entire food supply system, from inputs into production to production to the supply chains all the way to the end consumer, have a look at some of the weaknesses in that chain and what mitigations are available to us and what the cost of some of those mitigations might be. And what we want to do is get some advice from a food council, and expressions of interest have also gone out for that. And in terms of the food security strategy, there's obviously been a lot of work done on the supply chains during COVID. So we want to bring together the work that's already been done on those supply chains and bring all that together as well as part of the development of the strategy going forward.
What are the biggest risks to Australia's food security?
Well, there are things like climate. There are things like interruptions to the supply chain. We do produce enough food for our population 2.5 times over. We can actually produce most of our food here in Australia. I think we produce around 96% of it. There's only about 4% that we need to import. So we're one of the most secure food nations on the planet. But from time to time, we do have some risks, and we do need to have a look at that more broadly. We also play an important role internationally in terms of, feeding the globe and some of our near neighbours. So it's about making sure that we can continue to do that. Certainly maintaining our biosecurity system and the investments we've made there are proving critically important. But with changing climate, lots more people movement, lots more goods movement across the globe, we are, of course, remaining vigilant. And that is really important part of our food safety and our biosecurity system.
We've talked a lot about international trade and actual supply chains, but what about things like cost of living and the impact that has on food security to Australians?
Well, that's one of the things that is one of the focuses of what we're doing is cost of living and the pressure and making sure that, you know, people along the food supply chain, particularly our primary producers and our consumers, everyday Australians, that we put downward pressure for consumers, but make sure that everybody, particularly our farmers, get value for their inputs, you know, making sure that food in Australia remains affordable, but also that we can able to maintain supply.
Would that be, you know, looking at things like making sure that agricultural inputs are manufactured in Australia rather than imported?
Well, certainly that has been raised, and that is something that will get looked at by the strategy. And, you know, there'll be a whole range of things across different sectors that people will raise. Some of it will be inputs, some of it will be some of our logistics chain, some of it will be around pests and disease, some of it will be about climate adaption, some of it will be about, you know, what more we need to do in terms of, you know, our food and grocery code and putting downward pressure on food prices for consumers.
The report said that the strategy won't be successful if it's just implemented by government and that it needs a whole of industry approach. How do you see industry playing part in actually implementing this strategy when it's created?
Yeah, well, it will be really important for industry to work with governments of all tiers to implement the strategy. It'll also be, you know, important to make sure that consumers understand the process of our food supply in Australia, and that's what it's about making sure that we look along the entire food system and the entire supply chain to make sure that everybody has a good understanding. But certainly governments can't do this alone. We do need to work with industry, and some of the things that need to be done will be done by industry. And importantly, our food security strategy and the need for one came up at the productivity roundtable that we held in Brisbane with the agricultural industry, and some of that will be fed into the Treasurer and Prime Minister's productivity roundtables that are being held next week.
Where to from here when it comes to the strategy? How long will it actually take to develop?
So we've allowed for up to 2 years for the development of the strategy. We want to make sure that we consult broadly. So the discussion paper is open for 6 weeks for people to provide feedback. And it's, you know, people across the country, whether they be industry, whether they be consumers, whether they be peak bodies or consumer groups, are all open to put in submissions in relation to the strategy.
That's Australian Agriculture Minister Julie Collins speaking with Megan Hughes about the National Food Security Strategy discussion paper that was released yesterday. You can let me know your thoughts, 0487 991057.
I'm Lockie Bear. I'm from Monogeny Station in the Northern Territory. And you're listening to the ABC Country Hour.
Now, if you would like to make a submission to the National Food Security Strategy, you need to head to the Australian Ag Department website, agriculture.gov.au. And as you heard, the federal government is also calling for expressions of interest in a National Food Council to help government develop the strategy. The government says the council will be skills-based and include members with knowledge and experience from across our food system. So that expression of interest process is open until Wednesday, the 10th of September. If you're interested, you need to go to the National Food Security Strategy page on the DAF website. There's an email address and a reference number to quote in an email subject line. It all seems very straightforward. Now, some in the industry are concerned that the food supply chain pressures that were highlighted during the COVID pandemic haven't been addressed. Former Deputy Prime Minister John Anderson is the outgoing chair of the Crawford Fund for Agricultural Research. He says government needs to make sure there are adequate stockpiles of key farm inputs to keep producers operating in what is an increasingly uncertain world.
I think our rural research and development machinery arrangements in this country are quite good. The dollar-for-dollar research grants, the CRCs, et cetera, universities. We've done well, and that's to be celebrated. What is not to be celebrated is the way that agriculture's drifted off the national policy scene. So you hear desultory remarks about how we need to prepare a food security plan for Australia, and nothing seems to happen. You would have thought COVID would have woken us up. The blunt reality is that we are living in very unstable times geopolitically. You can think of 50 different scenarios where our shipping lanes could be cut because of difficulties or conflicts to our north. We're a trading nation. We have almost no diesel fuel stocks on hand, almost no fertiliser. Astonishingly, 70 or 80% of the agricultural chemicals we need to keep our production going, we don't have. But we're behaving as though the world was totally benign, we have nothing to worry about, at the same time as the government warns us in very blunt terms, that these are the most strategically dangerous times since the 1930s. I don't know how people sleep with themselves at night when they're in positions of authority warning us that we need to be prepared for shocks, and year after year after year go on behaving as though we don't actually need to do anything about it. I don't want to sound like somebody who was once in government and is now decrying the mob that have run the place since, but these are plainly very different times.
But in saying that, the coalition went to the last election with planned cuts to foreign aid, which is part of building up capacity in the region?
Many people I know, I've heard many an audience has said to me, charity begins at home. Soft power, particularly in the Pacific, using the expertise that people like Crawford and ACR can apply, our expertise, our direct aid, is very effective diplomacy, and it's the right thing to do, and it benefits us in security and in economic terms. We all thought COVID was a wake-up call. We couldn't get masks, and then we couldn't get toilet paper, and there was panic. Well, what happens if we can't get diesel? What happens if we can't get fertiliser? What happens if we don't have our medical supplies if something goes wrong?
That's former Deputy Prime Minister John Anderson. He's the outgoing chair of the Crawford Fund for Agricultural Research. He was speaking there with Josh Becker. So those are some of the concerns in the food security space on the world stage. We've heard about the national stage. What about the Northern Territory? We'll take a look next.
Do you know a young person with a story to tell?
Hey, well, has a chance to
tell our stories on a national platform.
Go to Canberra, go out, make change.
And be heard.
Enter by September 1st.
abc.net.au/Haywire.
Hi, my name's Erin Hart. I'm originally from Wisconsin in the USA, and we're currently standing on the Oberon Project. It's a beautiful place to work in the Tanami Desert, gorgeous red soil, beautiful blue skies, and I'm the exploration manager for Newmont Tanami Operations, and you're listening to The Country Hour.
On the text line 0487 991057, Robin in Bees Creek says, "Hi, I would like information on why store brand goods are cheaper than well-known brands if we provide 96% of our own food supply." Robin, thanks for your question. It is a good question. Turning now to the Northern Territory, which faces many of the challenges that the Agriculture Minister Julie Collins and the former Deputy Prime Minister John Anderson just mentioned, such as logistics and road access issues, climate challenges, cost of living pressures. Caitlin Patterson is an Alice Springs-based dietitian. She works with a range of people and communities on nutrition and health. Caitlin, what would you like to see the government and an eventual national food council to think about in this space?
Well, I guess if we start what areas we work on, a lot of our work works around focusing on food insecurity and helping people learn how to have a nutritious diet and improve their health with the food that they have access to. So it is great to hear that we're putting together a strategy to, I guess, address these issues at a much broader range. And so we work in Aboriginal communities, and food security is always at the back of our mind. And I guess just to set it up, it really is defined as people at all times having physical food, but also economical access to safe and nutritious foods that meet their requirements. And that is something that we truly focus on when we do any kind of education sessions. We try and tailor everything with that in the back of our mind, because if people don't have access, then there's no way we can expect them to have a nutritious diet or even know how to prepare a nutritious meal for their family.
So would you like to see a strategy considering how to develop nutritional knowledge in communities and around Australia?
Yeah, that would be amazing. And you can see in the priority areas that health and nutrition is a priority in that strategy conversation. So having an education component to the strategy would be really beneficial, because food insecurity is really complex. It's not just one area. It's not just food supply. It's not just the store. It's a really complex area. And so having a really cross-sectional approach and including all areas of health, education, industry, climate is going to be really beneficial to making this a successful strategy.
What are some of the complexities that the Northern Territory in particular faces when it comes to food access and food security?
Yeah, we are a unique bunch, aren't we? And we certainly have a unique set of complexities for us. I guess some of the big things that come to mind is our extreme weather and also the extreme difference between where I am in Central Australia and then in the top end. So we're not only combating heat most of the year, extreme heat, we also see extreme rain, which in turn affects supplies going out to community. It affects the infrastructure in stores, so refrigeration, etc., is impacted by these extreme weather conditions, but also in people's homes. It's really hard to run and expensive to run aircon, refrigerators, cooking utensils. I guess also freight and road conditions is another really big one. Some of our communities, or even here in Alice, we're so far away from the manufacturers and the supply chain that the access and the freight to get food here on a regular and safe basis is quite complex. These are just some of the issues that come up when we're talking to our clients out in community and even here in Alice Springs. What stops them from choosing healthy and nutritious foods?
There have been several studies come out over the past couple of years that have shown that Australians as a whole are eating less fresh produce, they're eating less vegetables. Mm-hmm. Why does this matter? Why is it a problem if people aren't eating their veggies?
Very good question. A shocking fact for us all is that only 5% of people are meeting our daily requirements. So that's 5 people out of 100 are eating enough fruit and vegetables. And the reason that that's such an important part of our daily life is that when we get enough fruit and vegetables, we reduce our risk of chronic conditions such as diabetes or heart diseases. It also helps prevent certain cancers like bowel cancer, for instance. So having enough of these fruits and vegetables provides our body with the core nutrients it needs to stay as healthy as possible. And to think that only 5% of Australians are meeting these requirements is a little bit scary to think of what health conditions we might be faced with later down the track.
So a National Food Council will be established to help government develop this national food security strategy. What kinds of voices or what kinds of organisations would you like to see involved in this council?
As we've said already, it is so complex. So if we can get people from across all areas, such as a health representative, education representative, land councils from regional and remote areas of Australia, especially in the NT, and any Aboriginal corporations that actually are part of that food chain supply, so some of those retail store organisations as well, but having people from all different components that affect our food security is vital that they've got a place at the table.
And how important will it be for the Northern Territory to be represented in this conversation?
We have extreme weather, extreme distances, a lot of complex health conditions. So to have a representative from the NT would be really vital to ensure that our unique issues or our unique food security concerns are put forward and considered. We don't want to miss out on having those conversations and coming up with strategies to address them.
That was Caitlin Patterson from Desert Dietitians. She's based in Alice Springs.
Yeah, hi, my name is Joseph Malecki. I work for Man Blue Farm in Katherine, Northern Territory. You are listening to Country Hour.
This is the Country Hour. Fiona Broome with you this afternoon. It is 10 minutes to 1 o'clock on your ABC. Up next on the Country Hour, an exotic potato virus has been detected in Australia for the very first time. How are growers and how are biosecurity authorities responding? I'll take you there very shortly. That's White Horse by Chris Stapleton here on the Country Hour. 5 minutes to 1 o'clock. Fiona Broome with you this afternoon. Got a message on the text line 0487 99 1057 on the food security issues and access to food that we've been talking about this afternoon. David says, hello, Fiona. By the time I buy my meat, beef, chicken, lamb and pork, there's no money left for veggies. Meat has to be subsidised in Australia by the government so we can buy veggies. David, thank you for your message and your perspective. 0487 99 1057 if you've got any thoughts that you would like to share with me this afternoon. Well, let's turn to some biosecurity news now. An exotic potato virus has been detected in Australia for the first time. Biosecurity agencies in Tasmania are working to contain potato mop top virus on a farm in the state's northwest. The state's chief plant scientist, Susanna Dryson, says there's no risk to food safety or human health, but she says the virus could affect yields.
We are responding to a detection of what's called potato mop top virus. Now, it's really important to understand that this mop top virus, I'm just going to refer to it as the virus from now on, is previously exotic to Australia. So this constitutes the first detection of mop top virus in Australia. So Biosecurity Tasmania is very grateful to the industry member that had a concern about a potato and brought it to our diagnostic laboratories so that we could actually get a detection, a diagnosis of mop top. So that happened on the 18th of July. Now, what is this virus? So this virus will potentially affect yield, you know, through impacts on the plants, but it also causes necrotic symptoms within potatoes. And those necrotic symptoms then are of concern from a potato processing point of view. Because I'd like to really emphasise, though, that we're quite early in the stage of this detection. So what we're doing at the moment is working with industry, working with the grower to understand where material might have moved and also how potentially material came onto the property. So this is what we would refer to as tracing, trace forward, trace back, you know, to find out potentially how far spread this virus might be or how limited in spread this virus might be. I just really want to emphasise is potatoes are safe to eat. This virus is a plant pest. This virus isn't of human health concern. So Biosecurity Tasmania has stood up an incident management team and we're working with industry to understand how far widespread this virus might be or not be. So what does this mean to industry? I really want to emphasise, you know, not to be concerned. Like, we're going through the process at the moment of understanding the introduction of this virus into Tasmania, but to go about their normal business and continue to work with Biosecurity Tasmania.
I'm Nathan Cowman, the CEO of TasFarmers.
Nathan, how concerning is this discovery of this disease for the potato industry in Tasmania?
I think it's very concerning in the fact that this is the first time this virus has been detected in Australia, let alone Tasmania, and it probably represents a significant failure in our biosecurity protocols in the fact that it's entered the state. Australia as a whole is protected as an island, and Tasmania has a secondary protection in that it's its own standalone island. But what we don't want to see is that the government either waters down our biosecurity protections at our borders or expects producers to pay for that protection. I think it's early days around the virus as it stands. However, you know, we need to have a really swift and strong response plan now. We need to contain, you know, the outbreak to the single farm that it has been detected on. We need to look backwards in terms of identifying how the incursion has occurred, and also look forward to make sure that, you know, the plant and machinery that may have been used on that farm hasn't transmitted the virus any further in the supply chain.
That's Nathan Cullman. He's the CEO of Tasmania's Peak Farming Body. He was speaking there with Larissa Smith. So some not so good news for the potato industry with the discovery for the first time in Australia of the potato mop top virus. We are coming up to 1 o'clock here on the Country Hour. You will head to the newsroom very shortly. I'll be back with you at 5 minutes past one for a chat with the Weather Bureau. Drop me a text if you've got a question, 0487 99 1057. See you back in 5 minutes.
G'day, Rob Hall here from Airway Logistics at the Darwin Export Hub. We support industry here to export rock melons, watermelons, pumpkins and mango to the world straight out of Darwin. And you're listening to The Country Hour.
Welcome back to The Country Hour. Fiona Broom with you this afternoon. Over the next half hour, you'll get the latest from Bushfires NT on the fire that's been burning near Mataranka for more than a week. That has burnt through a fair bit of country by now. And how do you get high school students interested in agricultural science? It seems to me that the answer to that question is bugs.
Definitely picking the maggots from like fake bodies and stuff. That was pretty fun. You had to get like the maggots out with these tweezers and all covered in highlighter dye, so you got to see under black light how much you got contaminated and everything.
I reckon I'd be up for a little bit of maggot picking with some tweezers myself. A few texts have come in on the text line, 0487 99 1057, on the food security national strategy that is being developed. Greg says, just wondering if lentils and chickpeas are being consumed more if people are worried about beef prices. That is an interesting question. I wonder if some of the what are called alternative proteins, so some of the pulses and some of the non-animal place based proteins, if they are increasing in popularity. Another text on the text line requests that people stop lighting fires because this person is sick of protecting people's property. We will check in on some of the fires that are burning across the Northern Territory in just a moment, but let's now go to the Weather Bureau. Rebecca Patrick is there this afternoon. G'day, Rebecca.
Yeah, good afternoon, Fiona.
How are things looking out in the Northern Territory today? What are conditions like? Have we still got some high winds and wind gusts?
Yeah, so sunny conditions right throughout the territory at the moment. Have seen a bit of wind through the Barkly and also up around the top end as well. It has been a little bit gustier this morning. So typically our windiest time is just late morning, early afternoon period. So we will start to see a bit of a decrease in those winds as the afternoon progresses.
We've been talking about ridges a lot over the past week or so. Is there another ridge moving through the territory?
Yeah, so there is a ridge through the territory at the moment that's from a high that's over southeast Australia now. So tomorrow there will be a trough coming through southern parts of the territory. So it's over WA at the moment, moving through tomorrow. Then on the weekend, there'll be a stronger high pushing up. So we will get those windy conditions again through the weekend. Particularly Sunday will be particularly windy, which means that fire danger will be increasing as well over the weekend. So that's something to be to be mindful of as well.
Yes, you will hear more from Bushfires NT on that in just a moment as well. Rebecca, what are moisture levels, humidity and dew points? How are they looking at the moment?
Yeah, so pretty dry during the day at the moment, right throughout, but we are seeing the moisture returning over the top end overnight. So expecting that again tonight and probably the next night as well. When this surge comes through over the weekend, though, that will push some dry air back up into the top end. So we'll see more drying out even during the nights from about Sunday.
Billy Lynch told us yesterday that there were more nights below 20 degrees in Darwin this dry season so far than the previous dry season. So we have had some fairly cool nights in the top end.
Yeah, that's right. So I think we're up to 39 below 20 degrees in Darwin. We are slightly below the average to date, but certainly we are expecting more of those nights below 20 from the weekend onwards with that dry air pushing through.
What does that mean for some of the southern districts? Will that mean sub-zero temperatures?
At this stage, I don't think we're quite getting to zero from what I've seen, but it would be quite close. So there is a chance of frost developing again from about Sunday, I think, across the southern areas. So, yeah, if you're in the south, then be mindful of that as well, particularly if you're prone to those colder mornings.
Mm. Rebecca, we will be hearing from Bushfires NT in just a moment on the fire that's been burning between Mataranka and Manbaloo. Can you tell us how conditions are looking there at the moment and what they're expected to do over the next couple of days?
Yeah, so has been a little bit blowy this morning, just looking at our observations at Tyndall RAF Base. So we have seen those winds getting up to about 30, gusting 40 kilometres per hour coming from the east-southeast. We will start to see that easing off during the afternoon. And as I mentioned, the wind's easing slightly tomorrow as well. But, yeah, certainly one to keep an eye on.
Yes, absolutely. Any warnings or anything else we should be aware of at this stage, Rebecca?
No warnings at this stage, but yeah, keep an eye out over the weekend with those winds pushing through, potential for some marine warnings or even maybe fire weather warnings as well.
Yes, we will keep an eye on that. Rebecca Patrick, thanks for your time.
No worries, thank you.
Rebecca Patrick there from the Bureau of Meteorology.
G'day, this is Rowan Fisher from Charles Darwin University and North Australia Fire Information, NAFI. I'm sure most of you use it. It's the website that provides all the information for fire management across 80% of Australia. And you're listening to The Country Hour.
You are indeed listening to The Country Hour. Fiona Broom with you this afternoon, just gone 12 minutes past 1 o'clock. Well, we've been talking about that fire near Mataranka that has been burning. That's now moved through more than 120,000 hectares of country. A short time ago, I spoke with Bushfires NT incident controller David Bredmore to find out how that bushfire is tracking today.
That fire, as you're aware, is in the rail corridor about 65 kilometres southeast of Katherine. Started on the 5th of August and it's been spreading to the northwest under prevailing southeasterly winds for some time. We are in the process of controlling that fire, but it is at 122,000 hectares in size with 114 kilometres of active fire edge and a perimeter of about 350 k's. So we have been working with the landowners in Stapledon, Dixie, Dry River, Nevin, Bloodwood Station Downs about undertaking some control lines on their northern boundaries, and they've done that very successfully. And we're working with Manbaloo Station to the northwest to do the same activity. So those activities are all taking place at the moment. And we're hoping that we will be able to hold this fire within the containment lines and reduce it to monitoring by Sunday. However, if it jumps those containment lines, then we are looking at a fire which may go for several weeks, but it will burn within the Mamberloo station boundaries. So quite a significant fire in that region, but we are certainly changing the status of that from a going fire to being controlled.
How are conditions looking out there today, David?
So today's pretty reasonable. The fire danger rating for the area is moderate, but we are heading into some very high fire danger periods over the weekend, and that will impact the Elsie fire and, of course, the new fire down on the Buchanan Highway near the Gregory National Park. But I think importantly, Fiona, is that on Sunday in the Darwin-Adelaide River area, we will be going into extreme fire danger weather, and it is very likely that we will initiate a fire ban on Sunday in order to help us manage the fire risk during the day.
In terms of the point in the season that we're at, how are things looking for the rest of the fire season?
We're seeing a bit of a mixture of very early fire activity in the Barkly and Savannah area and more typical fire activity in the Vernon Arafura area. However, you know, it is very dry out there. We are susceptible to fast-moving fire as a result of weather conditions, and I am particularly conscious of this weekend going forward as being a bit of a benchmark to what we may expect for the coming weeks.
Okay, so at this stage, the Elsie fire, that's the primary one that's sort of taking manpower at the moment?
Yeah, look, there's some advantages down there. I mean, there is some pastoral risk, but the Mamberloo station, which is in the direct line, has been destocked, so that's fine. We've only identified two boars we need to keep our eyes on, and there are two homesteads which we're watching closely, but they're actually outside the containment line. So at this stage, you know, I'm comfortable with the actions that we're taking. The crews are doing an exceptionally good job down there, but we are at the mercy of the weather a little bit, and particularly, as I said, concerned about this weekend.
All the best with that, David, hoping that that fire doesn't get out of control.
All right. Thank you very much, Fiona. Great to talk to you.
Add some colour and life to your garden. Get tips on growing classic annuals, flannel flowers, potted fruit trees, blueberries and bird-friendly plants. It's all in Gardening Australia magazine from newsagents and abcmagazines.com.au.
Bushfires NT Incident Controller David Bredmore bringing you up to speed on the Elsie Fire southwest of Katherine. 17 minutes past 1 o'clock on your ABC. Fiona Broome with you this afternoon on the Country Hour. Before 1:30, I'm going to take you to the Territory's research farms where high school students have been learning all about agricultural science for Science Week. Before we go there, though, let's have a bit of a tune. Liz Stringer. Hope that one got you slapping your knees and tapping your boots. That's Sinking Like a Stone from Liz Stringer, a very talented musician. She does an exceptional live show. 20 minutes past one on the Country Hour, Fiona Broome with you this afternoon. The Katherine Research Station was all a buzz yesterday after about 60 high school students descended on the site to learn about agricultural science. The students learnt about everything from how to test for screw tape to how to keep your cattle healthy. Christine Schindler stopped by to check out all the action.
Good job, guys. Go.
We are teaching the students about stocking rates and supplementation and how they relate to different trials we do within the Territory. Basically, just explaining that there's a bit more behind it than just feeding outlick or, you know, putting cows in a paddock. So one of the activities we did today was on supplementation. So we basically had a line of buckets down one end full of water. The kids had to line up behind the buckets and they had a cup given to them with holes in it. And each hole represented a different deficiency that may be present during different seasons in different land types or areas in the pastures throughout the year and how they affect the production of the animal. The kids had to scoop the water out of the bucket, run to the other end, pour their water into the empty bucket, and they had a choice to basically blue tack or cover the hole on their go, or they could keep going with the holes within the bucket. So a lot of kids found that after one group had patched all their holes and then scooped the water, they found that their bucket was a lot higher than the ones that weren't patching it and the water was leaking out. So the bucket at the other end pretty much represents the kilos of beef that are being put on a cow.
I'm Tolly, I'm in year 9 and I go to Chaffron High School.
What's been your favourite station area so far?
Probably the microscope. Just it's really cool to look through and see the world and like how miniature it is.
What did you see when you looked through the microscope?
Mostly like rocks of dirt, rocks, dirt. There was some ants in there as well.
Okay, so what's this lady got on? We got a mask on, we got gloves on.
I'm Aura Rainey and year 9 at Catherine High.
At Catherine High. What has been your favourite so far?
Definitely picking the maggots from like fake bodies and stuff. That was pretty fun. You had to get like the maggots out with these tweezers and all covered in highlighter dye, so you got to see on the black light how much you got contaminated and everything.
I'm Bridie Godfrey-Malecki and I go to Cath High and I'm in year 9 at the moment. My favourite place so far is the DNA station where we got to mush up strawberries, got pretty active and mix in lots of liquids to then find the DNA of the strawberries after, which was like a pretty slimy substance, pretty cool. Yeah, getting to see the slime at the end, playing with it, that was interesting.
That was Bridie from Catherine High. She was speaking with Christine Schindler at the Catherine Research Station's Science Week event. And another 50-odd students will tour the Berrima Farm Science Precinct tomorrow. Sian Fields from the farm gave me a sneak preview of the scavenger hunt they'll go on, starting with a mock bird flu scenario.
We have 9 activities across the whole farm, but this particular detour is called the Avian Flu Alert. What would you do if you found a sick bird and then going through that process and then being able to actually think about how that bird could impact on humans as well? So it's really giving young people, you know, that real life connection to science.
Is the sneaky plan behind it all to sort of drive some young people in the territory towards the agricultural sciences?
100%, Fiona. It's really around about looking at science from a broader perspective, that it's just not people in lab coats, that we have a lot of scientists in different roles, and your career pathway might be down university stream. That's amazing, but it might not. Where, you know, we want to support these next generation into agriculture and fisheries and just really support them to come in and work with us. And we've had loads of work experience kids and, you know, like we're really trying to support that knowledge.
And what role does all of this science play in the Northern Territory's agricultural industries?
Massive. It's 100% linked to it because you think about, you know, environmental changes, you know, how important it is for all our NT farmers and agriculture, sort of, doesn't matter if it's plants, if it's livestock, it's all connected about research, development and making sure that our economy in NT is strong. You're in a area of passion that without the food supply, the chain, you know, food security, that's what's important. And the NT, we're a small jurisdiction in the sense of growers, but we've got a huge amount of land. So being able to inspire that next generation to have jobs and be so proud of the NT and generating amazing income for us in a time we need it.
We are at the Berrima Research Farm on the trail of a scavenger hunt that a bunch of Year 9 students will be taking this week as part of Science Week. Sian, take me through the scavenger hunt. What are the kids going to be learning about?
So many things, from DNA, livestock, they've got insects, they've got fisheries, identifying parts of animals as well, which is quite, you know, icky.
I think you're going to be having them stick their hands in a bucket and figure out what they're feeling.
That's right. So it's called Goo Guts, and, you know, it's about identifying different objects that might be stuck in an animal's intestines. So, you know, being able to really, you know, feel and, you know, like, It's really tactile, really immersive sort of science, you know, to be able to think, could I be a veterinarian?
And we are actually standing outside, I guess, the insect lab, the home of entomology here at the Berrima Research Farm. Sian, take me inside.
Come through.
I'm Dr. Thilini Ekanayake. I'm the senior entomologist here at the Berrima Farm Science Precinct.
Dr. Thilini, what is the smell in here? What am I smelling?
You are in our fruit fly insectary. We have a colony of fruit flies here. The species name is Bactrocera javisi, the javisi fruit fly. It's native to the Northern Territory.
So you're going to be dealing with a bunch of high school students in here this week. What will you be speaking with them about?
I'm planning to show these interesting guys, the fruit flies. So in this cage, you can find the generation 2 flies, both males and females together. If you want to differentiate males and females, they have a needle-like structure at the tip of their abdomen.
I can see it. It's a very small point on the bottom of the fruit fly, but I can see it.
Yes.
And there is a curtain here to this cage. Is this to encourage the students to stick their arm in and see what it feels like?
Yeah, if they want to do, they can do.
I would love to study bugs. I think entomology is fascinating. Why did you choose to work with bugs?
I think I'm helping the industry mainly, and the growers, and how to control the insects in the wild. The main thing is I love small, small insects, small, small animals.
That was Dr. Thilini Ekanayake and Sian Fields from the Berrima Farm Science Precinct. They'll be taking a bunch of high school students through for Science Week tomorrow. Dr. Thilini actually told me that the native fruit flies release their pheromones in the afternoon. And so that sort of sweet, musty smell in the fruit fly room becomes much stronger in the afternoon when those fruit flies are feeling a little frisky. Science, eh? That's all the time we've got on the Country Hour today. My name's Fiona Broom. Thanks for your company. I'll be back with you tomorrow. Keep it rural.